particularly when you can hear that clearly there's misunderstanding, you could have just said, look, you misunderstood, this was X, and the matter is closed.
True.
So I'm saying it's in the interest of transparency working in the committee, and that's what I value, and you know that.
Well, that's what I said, it's not first table to documents.
Well, a colleague is not the same as giving a name.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, I'm happy to do that. I mean,
it's relevant to me, because I would have said, tell the Honourable Mayor to come along as well, because he's been there before.
Sure, no, I take that point. I just wanted to make the point that we are working together on the investigation, so him being there is not relevant. But yeah, I just wanted to say I'm looking forward to receiving the documents today. You mentioned that the secretary would distribute them today.
Well, that is the assurance I've been given, and I'll convey this. But as I say, I want to repeat, and people may be sick of hearing it, but I don't like being, it's been alleged that from the get, as it were, that we're covering up when we're not covering up. Thank you. Right, now, on that note, the apologies, we've already referred to them, they remain the same, but there's an early one. And Mkhongi, as far as I know, is in hospital. Honourable Mkhongi. So, I don't know if he's coming from a hospital bed. Well, I don't know. And Honourable Mantash will be attending. Ask her to come along here if she can. The only other person then is the Honourable yourself. Honourable Khalafa, you'll be leaving at about 11, half past 10. So let's get on with the Honourable Shivam Busenko. Yes. Can we have somebody? There are only, I have asked for the other documents to be distributed. I am still waiting. I've been given led to believe that the equipment in this building or in the committee section is not working adequately and that they are still trying to print it, is that? And so you will get it in the course of this meeting, all right? So let's move on immediately and get someone to adopt the agenda, please. Thanks, Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable Kalako. And I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to welcome one of our own members of the committee, but also a member of parliament, naturally, who is going to share with us a paper that he has worked perhaps with others on transfer pricing. And so it's going to be immediately over to yourself, Honourable Shambu. You can see there that we do hope to allow sufficient time for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, for giving us an opportunity to make the presentation on transfer pricing. Without waste of time, we're going to then start with the presentation. And as you see on the slides that we, not the one that is printed on the screen, that we started highlighting the realities of illicit tender flows and transfer pricing in South Africa, or based on the statistics that Andy Bookman was speaking about in great detail later on. The global financial literacy says that $122 billion was lost to illicit financial flows between 2003 and 2012. And the African Monitor, which is a research group that looks into tax issues in the African continent, says that South Africa lost $237 billion in 2011 only to illicit financial flows. And I think the issues are put within the context of the reality that South Africa is one of the biggest producers of natural resources, petroleum mineral resources. Yet, overall, the contribution of the corporate sector to the national revenue in South Africa is less than 20%. So the revenue of the state is therefore shifted to individuals, but the corporate sector, which is supposed to make massive contribution to the national revenue, is not making contribution. But the carrier factor is the fact that the mineral resources in South Africa contribute less than 80 billion rands. That is less than a budget of one municipality like Cape Municipality or Etiquini, or less than Johannesburg Municipality. The whole mining sector in South Africa contributes less than 80 billion into the national fiscal. And that is a crisis situation that should be looked into differently. And among many reasons why such is the case is due to the fact that these multinational corporations that are involved in that sector are avoiding taxes. Now, this forms the basis of this presentation that we're going to make here in terms of what we should do. So the presentation that we're going to do six things, five things, and then conclude. We'll give a background, the information, and the conceptual basis, and the definition of what transfer pricing is. Two, we'll then give the context of how is that relevant to South Africa. And then three, we'll then speak to the consequences of what are the damages that come as a result of transfer pricing, particularly it is utilized as a form of tax avoidance. And four, we're going to deal with what has been government's response to transfer pricing. But the most important component is number five, which will then make concrete proposals on what is to be done to respond to the phenomenon of transfer pricing. It's the most important component because there should be some sense of direction of how do we move forward. Now, on a conceptual basis, we basically say that transfer pricing is the practice where most multinational companies that produce commodities, they avoid paying taxes in the territories where they produce the commodities and pay taxes in other territories on the basis that they are avoiding double taxation. And they say that our company is based in one of the tax havens, and then they sell almost all their produced commodities to those tax havens, and they get a lower price. Besides that, the taxes that have to pay here in the producing country is far much lesser than what is supposed to be paid by those multinational corporations. It's one of the biggest forms of tax avoidance in the world. It's a global phenomenon, but it is a phenomenon that defines resource-producing countries, countries that are dependent on the production of natural resources. In certain instances, transfer pricing happens through overpricing of services. So what a multinational company will do will say that we've got marketing advice and services from our subsidiary company takes us in, and this cost us 50 billion. That becomes a cost, it's not part of the profit that is taxable. Yes. What happens is that if a form of transfer pricing that happens through transferring the fact to say that instead of selling platinum at the required 700 rands per ounce, they sell to themselves at 300 rands per ounce, and then the pay tax for the 300 rands only, and then they make their profit from the 300. Therefore, yes. But the other form of transfer pricing is to say that they say, no, we have got no, a company, you mainly pay tax for the profits that you make. What they do is that for the cost of the company, they say that our company in Bermuda is offering us this service, let's say as Lonely or as Anglo American, is offering us a strategic advice on marketing and this and this. And the cost of that service is 50 billion. And then they pay themselves, they take the money of the company to pay the company in Bermuda, and then that money is no longer taxable. I'm sure that is very clear in terms of, so that is how they avoid lots of taxes by utilizing, they basically, most multinational corporations, they manipulate the international trading system to avoid taxes so that they can only pay taxes in the low tax jurisdiction, like the countries that do not pay taxes. Let me put to that briefly that in the world we've got very small islands, but we are considered in terms of the UN as countries. And then those islands, they have got very tax legislation and enforcement capacity, so they just become head offices and offices of multinational companies because there's no taxes that are paid there. So companies will say, we can't pay taxes all over the world, we will pay where we are from. And then they claim that they're from Bermuda, they're from the Cayman Islands, they're from Granada, and they're from even some of the territories in Switzerland. Those are tax havens, like tax haven, not tax heaven. Like, there's a difference between tax heaven and tax haven. So that is what happens with the and the fact of the matter, Shepherdson, is that almost all multinational corporations, West and South Africa, when we go deep into the investigation, almost all mining companies, if not all, have got subsidiary companies in the tax havens. Like African Red Bull Mineral owned by, well, Patrick Mufid, well, we can say that in Parliament, they've got 16 tax havens. And most of their trading is with themselves. Same with Lonmin, same with BHP Billiton, same with Exaro, same with the implants. Almost all these multinational corporations that are involved in mining, they've got subsidiary companies in tax havens. And if you check who do they sell the products and commodities to, it is to the tax havens. In order to avoid taxes here in South Africa, and that is what happens. Now, the quick definition, like people always want to argue that transfer pricing is not illegal, and in most instances it is said not to be illegal because in many countries there is no adequate legislation that says aggressive tax avoidance and transfer pricing is illegal. So it is illegal because there is no law. It is not something which is just favorable. So then the tradition that has been accepted in most civilized countries is that the private sector individuals must contribute something to the national revenue so that it can provide common services for all. But most companies are not doing so for their own purposes. Even countries that have worked on in terms of legislation, they don't have the capacity to deal with issues. Now let's talk to transfer pricing in South Africa. It is not a new thing. It is not a relic that just happened post 1994. Transfer pricing has been there even under apartheid. But I want to speak to it from 1994 in terms of what has been the realities of transfer pricing and the acknowledgement of the problem post 1994. But just to highlight the fact that before 1994, under apartheid, I think between 1985 and 1987, there was a commission, a tax commission called the Marble Tax Commission, which dealt with base erosion and the whole issue of tax avoidance. And again, the problem, but the apartheid government, by the way they dealt with it was to say, you can do transfer pricing, but our way to deal with you will be to tax the mining corporations, particularly at a very high rate. The taxes in mining under apartheid could go up to 80% of the profit. The fact that they existed for a very long time, but mining companies continued to be profitable when 80% of their profits were being taken as taxes. That explains how they avoided tax, they would make profits elsewhere, much more beneficial, not in the country because they had been avoiding taxes. Now in South Africa, 1994, the Minister of Finance, 1994, the first was Derek Kiss. He sat for a few months and then that was succeeded by Chris Lieberman from, well, he came from private sector, from Nedbank. And one of the immediate issues that he dealt with was to say that there should be a process of dealing with tax avoidance and transfer pricing and all those issues. And put up a commission, a first commission post 1994 to look into tax issues was chaired by Judge Scott. So the current chair of the commission on tax, Judge Davis, was part of that commission as well. And it was given a broad mandate, which among other things had to deal with transfer pricing. And the that commission was did lots of investigation and released interim reports, about 9 interim reports between 1995 and 1999, on how should government and how should parliament respond to transfer pricing and all the challenges that define the tax avoidance. But what is worrying is that there seem not to be adequate institutional memory in government and in parliament of the work that has already been done, because the mandate and terms of reference to the CAS Commission were developed by the then Joint Committee on finance, and those issues were certain recommendations were done. Case studies were made, New Zealand, Australia, of how those countries deal with the situation, but still they never been a proper mechanism on how to respond to it here in South Africa. So if you check the third interim report of the CAS Commission, it mentions the fact that it had been identified already as a crisis situation. But also one thing which has happened is that post-1999, there has not been much said in South African government about tax avoidance and transfer pricing and all those things that we're talking about now. And that does not mean that those things had disappeared during that period. They actually intensified, they multiplied within that period, which there was nothing said about them. When no one was saying anything, the theft of South Africa's potential wealth intensified within that period, and it is one of the things that has been looked into. The Financial Intelligence Center, which is a treasury institute which is responsible for financial intelligence, reported in the portfolio company finance that $600 billion has been lost in 5 to 10 years to illicit financial flows, and there's still no mechanism to arrest that. I see the report has been distributed now, which is the report of the high level panel on illicit financial flows from Africa. It's a report which was compiled by the high level panel constituted by the African Union. So the African Union ministers of finance held a meeting and said, do have the crisis on illicit financial flows. And then the commission former president Thabo Mbeki to lead a high level panel to investigate the illicit financial flows. So working together with the Global Financial Integrity, the high level panel has been compiled that report which we have just given. So this year in January, that report was presented to the African Union Summit of Heads of State and Government to highlight the fact that Africa is losing billions of rand to illicit financial flows. But what is interesting about that report is that it gives a case study of just one multinational operation in South Africa. It says that the South African authorities informed the panel about a case in which a multinational corporation was found to have avoided $2 billion. In Texas, by claiming that a large part of his business was conducted in the United Kingdom and Switzerland. But $2 billion is, like, in terms of the current exchange rate, possibly 25 billion times. It's actually equal to the whole amount of money which all the mines in South Africa contribute to the national revenue annually. But here it's only one multinational corporation which is affecting $2 billion by claiming that they are doing business in the United Kingdom and Switzerland, which at the time had lower tax rates for the businesses and moving the legal side of the business to these jurisdictions, when the Colombian authorities investigated the case, they found that the UK and Swiss subsidiary branches had only a handful of low-paid personnel with relatively junior responsibilities, and that these offices did not handle any of the commodities in which the company dealt with. The company's customers were often in South Africa, but for each transaction, a paper trail was created that will route the transaction through the Swiss or UK offices to give the impression that these offices were critical to the business. The South African authorities were able to claim the tax that was amended because it was clear that the substance of the company's activities was coming out of it. So you have a situation where even when the commodities are being sold in South Africa, people say, they were sold to anyone here. We sold it to a company in Switzerland. So the tax is going to be paid there. We can't pay you tax here. It's even internal tax avoidance. The people exchange commodities and say, no, we never sold anything. Actually, we sold the gold to the UK, London. London is on the tax haven. We have sold the gold to Switzerland. Once the gold was traded internally. And this is the case which highlights with regards to South Africa. $2 billion, just one multinational corporation. So that's the kind of level which we are dealing with in terms of what is happening. But what is interesting as well is
is that you started off on the tax issue we're going to be joining finance with, and that's why I'm allowing it to go on to bring up as a patent industry. But maybe we want to really hone in on, which you started off really emphasizing as well, the mining industry itself, arguably the biggest culprit in the country. And we want to look at that with respect to the fact that we believe value addition, beneficiation is the route to go. But if we're going to use that, we also need to ensure that the benefits thereof remain here and are not transferred out. So I know that you've done, when I looked at your larger documents, you also had done a lot of work in that area. And remember, it's linked to that colloquium, and even refer you to Ha Yong Cheng with respect to that ownership and the economic action thereof. So if we can just into that area as well, having heard something, not everything, but something about the tax issue, let's move there, because the under-invoicing and various other shenanigans are just as important, maybe masquerading as something else, okay?
But just to highlight the fact that part of the crisis that is left due to transfer pricing is to undermine trade, one, but also to undermine the possibilities of local beneficiation and industrialization, because there's no need to trade with those commodities that can be locally beneficial and industrialized here in South Africa. The multinational corporations enjoy the fact that they can ship out the commodities out of the country far much less. I argue that we have seen that the Chamber of Mines submission to a discussion then in the ANC on why nationalization should happen. Are the increased taxes? Don't nationalize. I mean, that's increased taxes. Because they know that even if you can make taxes, they're not sufficient. They still make profit. Because they've avoided the area that. It undermines, at the center of it, it undermines the localization. It undermines local beneficiation and industrialization of mineral resources. Because of the whole phenomenon. Well, sometimes, yes, so they're going to speak for themselves, but they have highlighted some of these issues that the whole thing of transfer pricing also undermines the whole BE components. The BE components are victims of of these phenomenon and instances of transverse time. We have highlighted the what the African Monitor said, 297 billion lost for the global financial integrity. Highlighted that, but emphasized the fact that all these multinational mining corporations are involved in the act. But how has South Africa responded to the crisis? That is the we asked early last year when Parliament began to the first question session to the Deputy President in the NCO, we asked about the phenomenon of transfer pricing and capital flight and illicit financial flows. And his response was that honorable member is currently not going to establish a commission to investigate tax evasion and capital flight of South Africa. And then he then said, no, that is being dealt with by the relevant authorities, SARS and the Reserve Bank. And, but also emphasized that this is a global problem, and for this reason, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development has commenced a major research project to sharpen the mechanism to deal with transfer pricing and trade erosion. And there is an issue which I think we have to highlight that the solution seems to be derived to the OECD by the South African government. In almost all instances where this is discussed, solution is being fed to the OECD. South Africa is not a member of the OECD, but we tend to say we're going to find the solution in the OECD, which is predominantly an organization of European developed economies. So what is the solution there? We'll speak to that in terms of what is the solution. But also the Davis Tax Commission, it's ongoing. I don't know until when it's going to finish. In the interim report, they are highlighting that the solution is OECD guidelines in terms of what happens. But OECD guidelines, in most instances, even in instances where they are legislation, they apply something called arm's length principle, that all companies are expected, even when they're trading internally, they must charge each other prices that are at arm's length, like they must charge each other as if they are not related. That is what OECD says, that if you trade internally, don't inflate prices, don't overreduce the prices. You must trade with each other in a way which will do with business associates that are not connected to you. But it is very difficult to monitor such an arm's length process in terms of what happens. It is not right. The OECD guidelines and processes have been existed for more than 50 years. There's not understood any counter that has had the crisis of this situation. But also,
but then we then deal with the other one that isn't.
Yes. Now, what should be done? What we have to deal with in terms of what should happen? We propose that there must be some political actions, economic actions, and the technical issues that you have to present with, and then concretely propose that we must implement something called the sixth method. And in terms of the political action, it says that it should be a question of inquiry on transfer pricing and transfer to elaborate the extent and degree of. There's too much research already and discovery, but it can be formalized through an implementable process. By that, the is suitable legislation developed to respond to the phenomenon of transfer pricing. Instead of fusing the utilization of tax avoidance into the existing tax laws, maybe there must be a consideration of a separate legislation, but anti-transfer pricing law or act as a separate legislation, or anti-illicit financial flows act as a separate legislation that basically deals with this issue, that defines the phenomenon and says these are the mechanisms to stop it. We'll speak to that as well in terms of what should happen. But also, there's a political action that staff should pay detailed attention to these issues. But also, the Financial Intelligence Center, the FIC, says, no, we don't have the money to investigate huge multinational corporations who don't have the resources, do not have access. And the Minister of Finance, when he did the budget speech and wrote recently, never made concrete commitment of how much is going to be spent to capacity the FIC to deal with these questions. But also there should be criminalization of those who engage in tax avoidance. In the same way that tax evaders are prosecuted, tax avoiders should be prosecuted as well. So tax avoidance should be criminalized. There should be a principal position that we should criminalize tax avoidance in as much as tax evasion is a criminal offense. And the economic actions that should be looked into should speak to an appreciation that the solutions won't be necessarily technical. There must be certain decisive political decisions that are taken with regards to this question. The state should take strategic ownership of the key means of production. I mean, and it's not a narrow ideological argument. It is not a logical thing to do that we are producing mineral resources, are produced by multinational companies, they're leaving the country, all of them, and they're not even benefiting anything out of them. So taxation, not nothing. Why can't the state play a leading role in the ownership and control of strategic sectors of our minerals and key commodities that should be utilized for local beneficiaries? But also we realize when you've got a platinum mine that how come that in our platinum mine, we're making this much money, but one next door to us produces more than us, but it's not paying as much as we do. It's a simple thing as that. It's not an ideological thing, it's a logical thing that has to happen. We illustrated the fact that there was in the industrial policy action plan that there should be local beneficiation and industrialization of platinum. And then the minister has always been saying, or the Department of Treasury has been saying, that when the FERDA is finalized, there will be certain minerals that will agree, can't leave the country, and everything else. But the Chamber of Mines is not agreeing to that. The president is thinking that such an action is illegal. That is why the act has been brought back to Parliament. It possibly will go back as once before, such that there is no local capacity built to benefit our platinum or natural resources here in the country. Why can't the state take strategic ownership of certain sectors of the economy? In the immediate, it's not an issue that says that nationalize everything else and go for the greenfields and then you see what can do out of that. But also the other communication that has to deal with is the tightening of exchange controls. It's very easy to take capital out of South Africa, take money out of South Africa, huge amounts of money. But the ideological position is that once you allow money to easily leave the country, it will easily come in as well. But the reality is that a lot of resources have left the country because of loosening of exchange controls, and most of it illegally. Such that the Reserve Bank was engaged in something called voluntary disclosure program to say that all these corporations that have illegally left and transferred lots of resources out of the country will come and disclose, and there will be some sense of amnesty, they'll just pay a certain component of it. It's like we at economic management level, we look like there's no country, like there's no country, and that is what has been the essence of colonialism, the politics that weak states with no capacity to enforce anything. Just throwing money in the hand, yes. Yeah, and then there are certain issues that have dealt with in terms of the technical issues. Those are technical issues, isn't it? But also the important, the only important issue I want to speak to in terms of technical solutions is the issue on the timing of border control. Because our borders are still porous, and it affects trade. They are so very easy to move anything, like huge quantities of goods move in and out, in and out of the country without proper regulation in terms of what happened. Now the solution we propose concretely is that we should implement the SIG method. Most countries, Latin America, Argentina, the Dominican Republic, Brazil, I think at the beginning of this year, Bolivia passed a legislation to say that we can't work within the OECD guidelines on how we deal with cross-border. We are going to publicly quote the prices of all the commodities that are produced in our country, and we test it according to the publicly quoted price. We are not going to be the one who tells us how much the commodities are. Because what happens now is that Lomin will tell you that this is the price of all commodities, and this is what you can ask for. But the SIG method says, no, we can't have that because we have been avoiding tax for hundreds of years. The rest of the companies that are talking about it is for hundreds of years they have been victims of transfer pricing in illicit financial flows. Now, South Africa needs to have consideration in that separate legislation that we're talking about to enact legislation that will infuse strongly the SIG method. Obviously, after studying what they have been successful cases in the Latin American countries. And obviously, this is not just one issue intervention. There should be other interventions to make sure that we retain the natural resources in the country for beneficiation and industrialization, but we gain as much revenue as possible from the fact that we produce natural resources. So from the fact that God has blessed South Africa with natural resources, we need to be rich because of that reality. But now it is not the case. The cost of natural resources extraction in South Africa is far much higher than what natural resources extraction contributes to the revenue. Because they leave diseases, they leave environmental degradation, and a variety of other illnesses which can be dealt with differently. There are some other issues in conclusion which have to be, which can be considered from the tax justice network in terms of concrete things that they must be looked into. So those are the key issues that I wanted to speak to. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm not that familiar with the SIG method. I've only heard it referred to, so it was constructive to introduce some of us to get, or rather to explain the method to us. Now, I hope you realize, Honorable Shambu, that members will be also commenting and interrogating the arguments, all right? And you know how we do it, so there's no problem. Right, let's get any comments or inquiries, questions on the issue. I'll check by show of hands. Honorable Mpongi, Honorable Kornhoff, is that it for the moment? Right. No other queries? Going, gone. Right. Kongi?
No, thank you very much.
Ask you something for especially those who made the presentation. Is there any chance of you coming towards the front? Because I'm struggling to see you there. This is not a very suitable room for a committee meeting, I must be frank.
No, thank you very much, President. I'd like firstly to welcome the input, which for me is a very important and strategic discussion that the Republic of South Africa should she can work upon if we want to realize our own objectives for the second phase of the transition. But the strategic issue that I want to ask, the document argues for an establishment of a commission of inquiry to deal with these matters. But what I'm struggling with, what are we going to do with the recommendations of other commissions that have been there before? There have been reports since 1994, there have been recommendations, and then do we throw them away, those recommendations? So what would be the fundamental responsibility of this one as compared to others? And what are the strategic proposals from previous commissions that could be taken over, you know, as a process to go forward? That's the first. The second one, I want you to confirm that on the matter of the criminalization of tax avoidance. Notwithstanding what the chair is suggesting, this matter should be a matter that is being discussed with the Finance Committee. I just want you to elaborate on that matter. I thought the discussion on the transfer pricing its premise should be on our money. And this committee, trade and industry. One, the question of industrialization. Two, the question of beneficiation. The question of job creation. The question of investment promotion. And the question of trade. As a base for the debate. So I'm not sure whether the presenters can help us, you know, to locate the debate based on our own mandate. Because what is going to be a limitation is to base our debate on the mandate of the Finance Committee. Which we are going to enter on debates of what the mandate of the South African Reserve Bank and so forth and so forth. We can create political tensions. I want us to have the base be the base of our own mandate. So if you can begin there. Thank you very much.
I should just point out the reason we're starting now ourselves is simply that we can add one side of the coin to the final debate. So the idea is certainly to focus on trade and industry. And this is why we were encouraging Honourable Shibambu to come back. But we need to be aware of the tax implications. That's what I'm saying. So that when we go forward into the other engagement, we go armed, if I may put it that way. But you're quite right. Yes, Honourable. Then Honourable Quirin, all followed by the Honourable Kalako.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the member for bringing this matter once again to the committee. I think what we should do is, you know, there's a long history to transfer price. You know, it's not a new thing, and unfortunately, in terms of the legal terms, tax avoidance is legal. Tax evasion is not legal. So, you know, you will always, even yourself, will sit down and see how can I squeeze out a little bit more out of SARS. That's, if it's not evasion, you're on the right side of the law. So I think because of the framework all over the world and the history of the world, maybe transfer pricing was seen as tax avoidance rather evasion. But I think it is a mistake, and I think it is definitely necessary that especially the continent, Africa, looks and, you know, really take back what is due and payable to the nations in Africa and in South Africa. So maybe, Chairperson, there's so many studies being done on this, and I see there's quite good references in this document. Maybe we must look at that, and maybe invite the Mbeki Foundation to come here to do a presentation full on, and then the engagements with finance is going to be vital, because I think in the end the legislation will come from finance and SARS to close this, and obviously what's happening in South Africa and other parts of Africa, so it becomes a little bit of an international thing as well.
Thank you, Honourable
Chair. I want us here to avoid what the parliamentarians were known of. We do researches, we put commissions, we take many decisions and we create some acts. But often what happens its own implementation and follow up on these things. To me, I think the subject itself affects our minutes completely. It affects our minutes completely. We must, along the way, of course, see how to actually make sure that we are not transcending to other areas of other committees. But I think we cannot avoid it because our mandate is to grow the economy, to make sure that there are jobs, trade, investment. We cannot avoid to get into the subject because the money which the people of South Africa are robbed of through this avoidance of taxes is the money which we are going to plow it back to the economy itself. And so to me, I think it speaks to our mandate. All we have to do is to separate our role, but at the same time, I think it's one is high time that the government department begin to see that there is no Chinese wall between our specific roles which we have to be. In some of them, in some instances, we'll have to sit down and come together and see how do we put legislation forward. I think as the committee chair, we'll have to lead this case study of other, and see if there are successful countries which have, especially because this affects mostly the developing countries in the world, and see and study what can we do to try to see if as a country we cannot be able to implement that. So to me, this discussion is and the presentation, and of course to our colleague Lloyd for raising and putting forward this. And I think we should be taking it because it goes to the core of the mandate of transforming this country. Ideologies aside, but this is exactly the crux of the matter of dealing with problems of South Africa. So how do we do it? How do we move forward? Let's examine, you see, comrade Lloyd, I don't want to, this is a method. I've just read glimpses of it. I was not understanding whether Bolivia, whether I was following Bolivia of late, what is it doing? But to me, I didn't capture that it falls under that method. So these are what we must always look into alternatives in trying to lead our country forward. So to me, say, I think we won't be doing justice to say we'll have this discussion now and close this thing, and then we don't need a follow-up as a committee to reflect on it again and come with. Because we have not reflected, I don't want to lie for myself, on exactly the proposals which are put in the document, so that I begin to understand them in relation to our mandate in the committee and the broader transformation agenda of the government in the country.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalanka, Honorable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Comrade Honourable Member, for that presentation. One of the things that I picked up that I think that we should really look at is how this avoidance or this lack of declaring of profits by companies will really undermine our plans to beneficiate. And I think that's the biggest thing that this situation is going to cause us, because if these companies are selling their own product to each other, to themselves, and then reducing the prices, it's very unlikely that they're going to want to sell anything locally to be beneficiated locally. And I think this is the biggest challenge that is here. I mean, I understand the avoidance of the tax, etc., but I think that much more money will be lost if we don't beneficiate. And these huge figures will be tripled and will be made much bigger. But I think that the real problem here is the we're going to miss out on beneficiation unless we get this under control, because companies won't want to say they've made 100 million tons worth of stuff or whatever the amount is. They're going to say we've only made half of that if we sold it most of it to our Swiss buddies. So you know what I'm saying. So I think the beneficiation, the loss of opportunity to beneficiate, is the biggest problem here. Thank you.
Right. I'm going to be handing over to yourself, Shababa, just for a few comments on what you've heard. But I think that we should also, on your final pages, and I think we said this before, let's try and number all the pages in future when we have these presentations. But of course, consider the tax justice and the recommendations. The issue is you make a proposal here, or a proposal is made by the network, are more audits of server fees and royalty payments. These are more concrete issues one can deal with, etc. The intellectual property one is one that came up in the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill, which is now an act, in which it became apparent. And I think, although you were not in this committee, Honourable, you were aware of it as well, that a lot of our own intellectual property here, a multinational, will pursue it here, and then it will patent it in the sister jurisdiction, if I can put it that way, which is not South Africa. So we provided all of this know-how and etc., but then it's pursued elsewhere, and that is where the funds or the profits are made. But I think it does demand that we look at this from many different ways, and I think we've kick-started it here. But we will be asking for other options to be put forward. Let's examine this and really dig down. What can we do here? And with the focus on what can we be implemented as soon as possible. No more talk shops. Honourable Shibambu, some closing comments again.
Thanks, Jackie. I think that the center of the most workable solution would be to have a joint process of the committees, the trade and industry, finance, and mineral processes, because this issue cuts across the three committees and the legislative mandates and what they are expected to do in terms of the work of Parliament. I think maybe there, if we would agree that let us structure a form of engagement, which because this issue cuts across the three areas, and then we can then even the legislation that can maybe be considered will come out of that situation. Look, the recommendations of the existing committees, it's the long recommendations, it's specifically let's go on with the record of head throughout. Like you must take the latest report, interim report of the Davis Tax Commission on transfer pricing. It says, let's go on with OECD guidelines and arm's length principle. And how you regulate that is very difficult. Just illustrate that is to say that if you take companies, no, trade as if you are trading with another business. Don't trade like trading with yourself. You'll say, yes, we're trading like we're trading with another business, but we're going to charge the same price we charged before. The no benchmark. There's no ways to verify if the people that do it is consistent with the law. And the emphasis is that we need to criminalize tax avoidance. It's long overdue. Currently tax evasion.
Because apparently you are allowed to avoid.
Currently tax evasion is illegal. So we need to criminalize tax avoidance, where people deliberately say yes, where deliberately say no. I know that I produce the goods and services here, I must pay tax here, but I'm going to present papers that are not paying tax, I'm going to pay in Bermuda. It's not in place in a way that criminalizes as well the multinational corporations. It's loose end. And every president says that in his response in the COP, that unfortunately it is not a criminal offense.
That's right.
This If somebody tells you that it's aggressive, they say when it's aggressive, then you can attempt it. That is what the person said in the MCO result. Unfortunately, it is not a criminal offer, so we can't do anything about it. And there is billions of rands being lost because of tax avoidance. So there's too much money being lost because of tax avoidance instead of the tax evasion. So there must be a mechanism to criminalize the tax avoidance in terms of what we should do. Today the issue has got effect, of course, in the trade industry component and the possibilities of local beneficiation and what's that. But I agree that maybe in that joint process which we should engage in, let us invite the expert inputs, let's invite the high level panel which was commissioned by the African Union. Most of them are based there in South Africa. President Beki is a great. Let it come to say that this is what we're dealing with. And these are some of the issues that we can do to respond to that. Let us study the sixth method. Let's send a delegation to the countries that have successfully curtailed the crisis. Meet with tech authorities, they were governments, and understand the intensity of the problem. So those are some of the concrete issues that we have to deal with moving forward. But it so involves us, but the solution would be that which involves the mineral resources and finance so that we have the most comprehensive legislation that does not seem to impede on us.
I'd like to thank you, Honourable Shivambu, and if you could just concretize some of the last points that have been made in the form of, say, recommendations from your part, your side, to the committee, so that we can consider the lot. And thank you once again for introducing us back into the colloquium where the issue has come up. And if you can then just make some space and also listen to what the Honourable, Debbie will be sharing with us, it'd be preferable also to come on the right. Just while that is happening, members, just on that, you remember we asked the department after we'd gone on our oversight if we could just get 10 points of all of these things. We go to constituency. How many people know about NAMESA, SAMS, etc.? Can they, in 10 points, put something together so that every member has got something to take back with them? Now we have received here from Ms. Naidu, who's done the collating for the department. I'm not sure if you've all got a pack that looks like that, but it's in this sort of pack, and there's 10 of, you know, these the last oversight groupings we've been to. I think it'll be valuable information, even if you think, well, you won't dish it up in the constituency, but it's valuable aid to yourself while you're participating there. So that is coming. The second thing we have received, just hold up one. That's just one of the files. Have a look and see how big it is. Now, Mr. Hermans has said this has just arrived, as you see now. They are beginning to process it today and tomorrow, and they'll be available tomorrow. You know, they're going to work steadily through this to everyone. Remember, it's not just the four or five of us, it's the 9 of us, or 10 of us, or 11. Okay, with that happening, I'm hoping that, you know, can you see clearly from there, right? Because we don't want people behind pillars and one thing and another. But we've got here the person who first raised the issue in the colloquium and linked it along with Dr. Jordan is Ms. Bridget Hadebe from the South African Mining Development Association. So thank you very much for coming here this morning at the crack of dawn. I know you had to get up, but thank you, and it's over to yourself. Now, you're given the freedom to really present effectively on this before we engage.
Thank you very much, and honourable members, thanks for allowing me again to come here. I in the plural, we are very happy that at least your committee continues to give us some audience, and we're still waiting for our committee to answer us for that. lending them our ears. But anyway, I didn't participate in the former President Thabo Mbeki's report, nor have I been participant of the Global Financial Integrity or Independent Development Information Center. I sit here as an individual and as an organization of members that have been on the operations side. And we will keep on, you know, sounding like a broken record, repeating certain things. And even if it's one or two or three slides that I'm bringing back again, it's just to reinforce the position that we're saying. What I'm going to share with you is exactly the experience that we've had, the experience of building mines for 28 years, sinking shafts all over the world, and in particular South Africa, creating financial models, audited financial statements, designing an ore body, but not just ending there. Looking at the law, a law that has to be respected, and the law that has to be implemented. And looking at how, within the integrated resources development approach, this law particularly affects the requirements of the EEE codes and the requirements of the Department of Trade and Industry with reference to specialization, in reference to beneficiation, small and medium enterprises, and the requirements of the Treasury, the Ministry of Finance, in terms of tax payments. So you cannot talk about the mining industry in its isolation of an integrated resources development approach. Because when the minister gives out a license to trade, it is that license that gives you certain obligation to do certain things. It is that license that says you must be charged on time. And when you look at the charter, a specific areas within the charter that talks about compliance issues, that affects in particularly the Department of Trade and Industry and what I'm talking about. And I'm going to show out the scorecard elements of how it affects the Department of Trade and Industry, and how, by direct and indirect, in terms of the integrated resources approach, if you don't get the mineral section right, all other industries will not come right. So it's a continuation, and this reflects that. But as I sit here today, I personally represent an organization that owns shares in a company that might, at the end of the day, not allow us to be party to that partnership anymore, because we refuse to sign a document that is going to transfer the law beyond the requirements of the Charter of 2014. Now we have three options. We can stay in the partnership and keep our shares by signing the bank restructuring financial agreement, or we can sell the shares and walk away, and if we don't do that, then the bank is going to take the shares. Now we are saying we will not be party to the negligence approach and to the irresponsible approach of not abiding by the law. And by abiding by the law, if there are certain requirements that have been met by 2014 that affect DTI, that affects finance, that affects everybody, and by signing, it means that we are also party to not obeying those requirements. Because only Parliament has the mandate to defer or extend a law beyond 2014. Now let me go into my submission. Now if you look at this, we gave this before about why it's transfer pricing, and I'm not going to go through it again because I think the Honourable Floyd has already gone through it. And in the previous submission I gave it to you, so this is for your reading in terms of that. But there's also some ways to transfer price, and you know, you underreport or you underprofit full of range products, inflated expenditure, then capitalization, transfer between South Africa-based companies which are connected, but the transfer towards the company carrying an asset loss, which is used to reduce prices, and exchange rate misreporting. Impact on the mining sector, and their outflows exceed local spend significantly, bleeding property. Projects committed are underfunded because of the loss of profitability. Commitments are scaled back and delayed. Triple B partners, and who are the Triple B partners? Rural communities in many instances. Organized labor, could be labor investment companies. It could be women in mining. It can be youth in mining. It can be disabled members of the community. So it's a whole Triple B broad-based black economic empowerment people who are then denied dividends to go towards paying or repaying their loans, and when you hear at the end of it, you cannot be the owner in 2014. Now, if you go further, of course, the Honorable Floyd also mentioned the subject losing $1.7 billion in the mention of the Global Integrity Report, Global Financial Integrity Report, where we're losing a lot of money. But in particular, he was referenced to $29.13 billion. In 2012 alone, South Africa made losing $29.13 billion. Some divide the multiplier by 11, something over $300 billion rest here. Now that's the government. And if you go further, then there's the $400 billion that was then discovered by Alternative Information Development Center. They did a very unique report, and I would really advise you also to ask them to come and give the submission, because they did a report on Lonman and a few other mining organizations, and they have a lot of substance and a lot of facts in it. One of the people in that committee is a lady that also works for Competition Commission, so they have a whole few experts of people. And then, of course, the former President Mbeki report. So what he's saying is that based on all those organizations and us from Sundown, from the operations side, it's a collective approach. The world is waking up to this. And we're very happy that this is a statement that was given by our Minister of Finance. Honorable members, we're also taking further in this budget speech steps to combat financial leakages, which deprive our economy of billions of rand through erosion of tax base, profit shifting, and illicit money outflow. Action has to be taken to close tax evasion loopholes such as transfer pricing and profit shifting strategies by South African operators. I ask that South Africa continue its support for the recent G20 decisions in this regard and the implementation of action in support of the transparency and sharing of information. South Africa must similarly stand firm in the fight against tax havens. So, you know, the Minister of Finance has, and this is now the government of South Africa speaking through him, and saying that the people of South Africa collectively must do something about it. Now, if you look at the mining industry, just to look at the linkages and to just remind us, the mining industry had a direct and indirect contribution to other industries. 70% of GDP, 38% of merchandise export, these were the 2014 figures, 19% of private sector investment, 11.9% of social investment in the economy, 50% of volume of transnet rail, 16% of formal sector employment, 94% of electricity generation by coal, 4% of electricity demand, and then 37% of country equipment. So now, because you're not reflecting the true income, then these figures are diluted. And if the true income was those $147 billion or $29.13 billion, then the figures will be more. And because of that, now it then offsets on other problems. What do we mean? Look at what you have in ETOS. Would we have a problem in ETOS if that $400 billion was declared? Or $213 billion, $2.9 billion US dollars, which is more than 300 million rand declared. So we are going to the Minister of Transport. It, you know, the integrated approach, you know, how does it affect other industries? By transport pricing, you can't build the roads because the money is not there to build the roads. But it goes further. By transport pricing, you have, because you have transport cutting this load share, because there's not enough money to adhere to the $200 billion, $250 billion the Ministry of Public Enterprise is like. ESCO has to raise additional debt in the region of $50 billion, open the market to original plan of $200 billion. ESCO is facing significant challenges that threaten the sustainability across the national treasury. These are the statements that were made by the Minister. So we are saying, let's fix our transfer pricing. You obviously would have a lesser problem, because there will be money for tax payments for the country to do these things. And if we go further, we have a problem with SAA. And the problem with SAA is, okay, we need $50 billion to stay afloat. But we are looking at guarantees for funding for SAA. They have to meet conditions of the open market. Funding in the open market, we need a negative credit rating. If you have negative credit rating and if you export, it's now junk rating. How are you ever going to get the money when the money is there for transferizing? When the money is there, I'm just making sure that we create laws and rules and regulations that will enable for us not to lose the money, let the tax be paid, and then the trickle-down effect will be done. So the solution, Minister, please advocate for the knowledge of the transfer pricing of the government doing it, hopefully, after the Minister of Finance has written the call, so let us collectively then create a united front approach. And then it goes further. Education is also being affected. The acting CEO of NSFS, Nathan Johnson, in 2013 said the number of students that are able to fund is significantly less than the number of students who need financial aid. Education Minister Ben Nandi told Parliament in 2014 that $147 billion could accommodate all university students in the country. And, you know, if we had the money, maybe this would have been a lesser case. You might not have had to need $147 billion. You might have to ask for less because the other money would come from the income that you receive through the tax. And we go further in the health. The bulk of health sector funding comes from the South African National Treasury. The health budget of 2013-2012 was 1.1 million, which was aimed at improving hospitals and setting public health ahead of national health insurance scheme. Firstly, there's a shortage of doctors, medical staff, and clinics and hospitals. And the solution, again, let us address collectively with all those ministries the problems of transport. But it doesn't end there. Do audits come? Why do we continue having some auditing firms giving clean orders for companies that are doing transport pricing? We have a personal experience. He's sitting here. We're for 3 years in one of the partners that I have. And remember the last time I said, please, go to the DMR and find out what the facts are. Because if I sit here, unlike you, I mean, clearly you've got protection. And if I can sit here and sit out what the issues are, I'll be sued because we signed confidentiality. But all the information is with the DMR. Go and find it and find out who the company is. We refuse to sign the audit financial statements for 3 years. Because of what? Because of transfer pricing. And why are we refusing? Because we refused, we just didn't understand why for all these years, you know, there was no money to pay certain things, to increase the income of the workers, to adhere to the housing and living conditions standards of the charter, to adhere to social and labor plan, to adhere to all the charter compliance issues. Then we did what we requested to go and have an audit. And then we employed a company to have a look into this, London Community Brokers. We went to the marketing, where the company is marketing, and we just realized how much outflow of capital there is. You know, and then we say, no, we're not going to sign this audit to financial statements. This is crazy. But how many BEE companies have the ability to read into that? Because many of the companies are told that because they don't have the expertise, you can't go to the mine. So you are just going to blame. So you are going, these are the things that happen on a daily basis, and if we don't cure them, the trickle-down effect is going to affect all of us. And we all live in this country. So what happens? You're a BEE or maybe you're a South African company. The foreign investor comes with the money. You help the foreign investor to get the transporting permit and the mining permit and the mining permit. Because without that tick in the charter, in the scorecard, which I'm going to show you as we go along, you will not get the license to trade. It doesn't matter how much money you have. So he's got a historically disadvantaged South African. And white women are also 80% according to the law. So whether you're a white woman or a black woman or a black BE, community or non-community or whatever, you sit there, even if you have expertise, the company says, I bring the money, so guess what? You sit on the board. Now, people like us are very vocal because we have expertise. We started 28 years ago. But how many people have done it? And then we face the companies that own a lot of the mines in South Africa as country miners. So it's very difficult to sit around the table with people like us and then go and give us a fake financial model. We know how to design our own financial models. They interrogate it. Do a due diligence process. Design an all boy, sharp thinking. That's what we did. But how many of them are we? So because we don't have as many we who are operationally inclined, we have a problem. And the problem starts just there. So you sit there and you're told all these figures and the workers cannot get an income, okay? So they want 12,500. It could be more, it could be less. In many cases it could be more because of this thing and you know it. And then we also need money to be paid in for dividends, but it's not coming because all the money, the reflected income is less than the income they make when the final product has been sold offshore. Because the price has been transferred. So that 5,000 is supposed to come in instead of the 500 reflected on the balance sheet does not come in. Now if you go further, so the finance institutions and banks and funds, so why do you have, so it's a collective. On the one side, there's the auditing financial, the auditing firms having to look into it, and then we must go further. The bank should not finance any organization that has funds to profit. Then you go for a loan to the bank, and it's a mining loan or a manufacturing loan. You go to the private equity funders. Each bank has these financial people with relevant expertise. If you're a farmer, you go to the farming division. If you're manufacturing, you go to the private equity division of the bank that does use for small and medium enterprises, industrialization, and manufacturing. If it's mining, the private equity funders, many of them are geologists, mining engineers, metallurgists, or commercial lawyers, or mining lawyers, so they have the expertise. And they obviously would be looking into this, but what is the bank motive? The kind of investment for shareholders. Who are also the shareholders of banks? Some of these banks that you go and fund, to be funding, are offshore. Even now, Standard Bank is owned by the Chinese, outside my own, by the British. You know, as if we didn't have enough. So, you know, so then, and who are the offshore owners? That's it. It's different in offshore countries, and the return on investment for those shareholders, they've got a different approach and a different challenge to us. And they will not be sensitive to our issues the way we're sensitive to it. Unless effective legislation is put, we'll always have a resolution. And I don't really always agree with the fact that nothing can be done about it. And I will demonstrate to you how that it becomes illegal. Transferizing is illegal, and I'll show you the mining law while saying it is illegal. If you don't comply with one law because you're transferizing, it's illegal. And let us see how we can create a connection. And if you go further, the law of commercial law versus transferizing, they do the purchase and sale agreements, they do the sales agreements, they do the marketing agreements, they do all these agreements. So they must also come on board and be the watchdogs and the foot soldiers to combat against transferizing. And the social, economic, and political effects of advertising now reflect with the situation. When advertising creates disgruntled communities that embark on service delivery protests. And in those areas where there are a lot of services delivered to protest, most of them are the mining towns. And those, most of them are the provinces, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and also Limpopo. Those are mining provinces where the bulk of the mines of South Africa are sold there. We don't have a lot of service delivery protests. I haven't heard of anything in Aqualand because it's a dead town. All the diamond has been now nearly up explored, so it's going to a ghost town. And I haven't heard a lot of service delivery protests in Free State because also the more and the mineral gets depleted, you know, the less you can fight for. But when people sit in a very lucrative environment, like in Maritani or in Madrid, or in any of our villages in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and you wake up every morning as a worker of any kind, whether you work in mining industry or whether you work anywhere else, and you go to work, and you've got to pass roads that are not tarred, shacks, and there's no roads, you don't have railway lines, you don't have facilities, transport infrastructure, you don't have health. You have to travel far to get to a clinic and all that. And you see and you read and you see on TV, not just politicians driving with their nice cars, but because I'm there next to them, and all of you, they look at us as a new enemy. All of us. Because why? We are all privileged. And my relative in my village, Hakao, is not. And your relative is not. Now how are we going to combat that? And the charter, the mining charter, has all those rules and regulations that assist us to address those little things that the community needs. They don't want analysis. They just want basic human needs. So if you look at all the elements of the charter, the elements of the charter from the ownership, beneficiate, procure in South Africa, social and labor plan, it talks about community development, create good houses, make sure that people are from the middle management, upper middle management, they have positions, but they show creating skills. Don't talk to the issues of what the South Africa needs to make South Africa develop, function. And then, if that doesn't happen, by 2015, 2030, we are left with 15 years to get a national development plan. If that doesn't happen, will the issue of nationalization be faced again? I wonder. What else will people be looking at? Now, it's for all of us together to sit in at least when people want to say, we've had enough, let's rather go and take whatever back that belongs to us. We'll say, well, wait a minute. With a charter that's functioning, with a managed development plan that's functioning, but if all that doesn't function, what else do we have left? So think about it. Now, if you go further, this is what we have. We want to move from exploitative mining model, I showed you this before, but I'm reintroducing it, to the sustainable mining model. And we need to move from the left to the right. But we also need to make sure that we address the disgruntled work and the disgruntled communities issues through charter compliance. And that is something because the charter non-compliance, the transferizing, the services, the protests, Maritani, and the thing goes on and on. And then you have also environmental hazards, and you have cities turning into ghost towns. Within 20 years of our democracy, wait for South Africa, these things are still happening. Now, I'm not wanting to give them the perception that I'm saying not much has been done. A lot has been done. And through government, you know, where government through little and big government interventions trying to do certain things. But the new colonial British with this recording ownership of the African economy, even after the political emancipation of the British of South Africa, be reached. And the finally, thanks of transfer parties within 21 years of our democracy, is only government that does not make a meaningful contribution towards advancing social and economic equality. It's not enough, but at least you can see some houses, and there were no houses. When I travel to these rural communities, I see water, I see electricity, I see cell phones, I see many things that we didn't have many years ago. But who is introducing that? Government. And what are we doing? We're not adhering to charge for prices. And now, if you look at the transportation of living industry, now look at section 100 of the Act. And I put to the power so that you can just read what it says. Section 102A says to ensure that the mineral and petroleum resources development act to ensure attainment of government's objectives of redress historically, social and economic inequalities as stated in the Constitution. Minister must within 6 months from the date of which this act takes effect, develop a broad-based socio-economic and economic charter. It will set the framework, target, and timetable for effecting the entry of historically disadvantaged South Africans into the mining industry and allow such South Africans to benefit from the exploitation of mining and mineral resources. And we go further if you look at the elements of the mining charter. Okay? Both elements of the mining charter in terms of ownership. Effective ownership is the requisite instrument to effect meaningful integration of historical advanced directives in the mainstream economy in order to achieve a substantial change in radical and gender disparities prevalent in ownership of mining assets and thus pave the way for meaningful participation of historical advanced for attainment of sustainable growth of the mining industry. Stakeholders commit to achieve a minimum target, a minimum. It's not just the only target. It's the minimum. You can go beyond 26%. But achieving a minimum target of 26% ownership to enable meaningful economic participation of historically disadvantaged South Africans by 2014. To date, we have, the research of 49 listed companies in the JV index, and we discovered it was only 2.39%. So it's about 3%. That's minus. So we took on about 2.4%. It's been 21 years of our democracy. Now, when you apply for a permit, or you apply for a prospecting permit, or you apply for a mining permit, you need to be adhering to this. This is the ownership scorecard that is part of Section 100 of the Act, that is part of the Charter. It looks like this. Ownership scorecard is a broad-based social economic empowerment charter for the South African mining industry. If you look at the ownership, and you look at the target for effective ACSA ownership, and then it's saying meaningful economic participation and full shareholder rights. 26%, 26% by 2014. Now, 2014, we don't have that. And because we have foreign ownership, and South Africa doesn't own, why didn't we just keep it reversed? You know, when we started creating this, when we created the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, 83% was owned by South African-owned companies before the Anglos and those companies were offshore. But it was South Africans. Foreign investors could not come in because the state was not a custodian. Then the state, then of course the other resources and reserves were owned by the government. And then we needed to open up for good reasons. Then we created the charter of the scorecard and mining legislation for good reasons. Now 20 years time about democracy, after 300 more than 30 years of wherever we come from, we have a problem. We can't even achieve 26%. There is a problem. Why? Because foreigners own our country. Now, there's nothing wrong with foreign ownership, but there's something wrong with not in control of your economy. If you're not in control of your economy, then you're not going to be in control of your country. And that is a problem. So if you go further, elements of the mining charter, procurement and enterprise development. Local procurement, that's in the mining charter. It says local procurement is attributed to competitiveness and transformation, structures economic value, presents opportunities to extend economic growth, that allows for creation of decent jobs and widen scope for market access of South African capital goods and services. In order to achieve this, the mining industry must procure for B entities in accordance with the following criteria. Procure a minimum of 40% of cost of goods for B entities by 2014. Ensure that the multinational suppliers of capital goods is Caterpillar, because they don't have a manufacturing plant here, or any company that's not manufacturing here, but to supply goods and services to South Africa. And annually, they must annually contribute a minimum of 0.5% of the annual income generated from local mining companies towards socio-economic development of local communities into a social development fund from 2010. Now, you know, so if you look at the mining legislation, there's so much links that goes in your DPI portfolio. So much links. Procurement, beneficiation, you know. And then procure 70% of services and 60% of consumer goods from the entities by 2040. And what we're doing now, a lot of the goods are procured from China because we're not appreciating industrializing here. A lot of other goods are procured offshore because you don't have the factories here. Despite the fact you have the commodities, we have the minerals here, but you don't have the factories. Now, we need to look into that. And of course, this is the scorecard. When you apply, you have to comply to the scorecard. It's like, a scorecard is like when you go to the bank and you have to fill in the bank form. And when you fill in the bank form and comply with all the bank regulations and rules and requirements, then you get a loan. So the same thing, fill in my form, comply with my requirements, then you get a permit to trade or you get a license to trade. Okay. And then, so if you look at procurement and economic development elements of the mine chart, it's still part of the broad-based and socio-economic report. That report has it's also by 2014 deadline in terms of reporting. That continuously report has the company reported the level of compliance with the charter for the calendar year. You've got to comply. So you've got to report. Has the procurement enterprise, procurement spent for being entity from capital goods, services, consumable goods, and then also development. Additional supply contributed, contribution to the social fund, how much are you supplying to the... So this is how a scorecard looks. And by complying with the scorecard, you then get a permit. Now, to date, a lot of the companies are not complying. But what are we doing as a department? And what are we doing as a government? I've still not heard a single voice from any official saying that I'm going to apply the law and I'm going to apply penalties. Since 2014 has passed. So who do we go to? You know, we came in last year, we spoke to you people, we tried to speak to our portfolio committee, we requested many meetings, we didn't even run the stakeholders at the beginning of March. Since then, we're still waiting, we're begging and pleading and hoping. But I'm just saying, every time you call us, we drop everything and we come. So that's the more we talk and the more we reinforce what we say, hopefully through you, we might tell your other honorable members, please. No, it's not all about being based on money, it's also about the country, you know. The country has to function. Because too often on TV we see people acting in parliament. And we need to get the country functioning. But the economy is halting, foreigners are older, and what do? We keep on spending each other's space. Let's deal with those problems, or let us come and bring the money and solve those problems, and let's make sure that the country functions. We need to start working and looking into the economy and making sure that we own that relevant is ours. In partnership with our foreigners, maybe in our terms. South Africa first. It has to be in partnership with foreigners. Otherwise, it has to be for the emancipation of the majority of the people. Every person of South Africa must benefit. Now, beneficiation elements of the mining charter. Beneficiation seeks to translate competitive advantages in mineral resources endowment into competitive advantages in programs to enhance industrialization and maintain development priorities in this regard. Mining companies must facilitate local beneficiation of mineral commodities by adhering to the provisions of Section 36 of the MPRDA and the Mineral Beneficiation Strategy. Again, this is the scorecard that scores you on beneficiation. And if you read it, you've got to comply. Contribution of a mining company towards beneficiation, this measure is effective from 2020. And then additional production for Section 26 and a compliance target is Section 26 of the MPRDA percentage. For volume contribution to local value addition beyond the baseline. The beneficiation strategy and its commodities modalities implementation outline the beneficiation requirements for commodity and tested in South Africa. So the legislation is saying we have to comply. These are the kind of things that we should be creating in South Africa. Now, the beneficiation and the industrialization. If you look at a commodity, the reason why I put this picture here is that these products that you see, the pots, the kitchen units, and all the products that you see in front of you, come from our minerals. We have iron ore, we've got manganese, we've got nickel, we've got vanadium, and we've got chrome. Now, we must be careful. When we start encouraging these companies to set up a manufacturing base in South Africa, we must have made sure that while we're also looking at effective legislation in the mining industry to avoid transfer pricing, we must also avoid having transfer pricing through the commodity. If I'm a winemaker and I'm on the farm, and I sell that wine to myself for 500 rent instead of 5,000, which is the real price, because I have an offshore company that's listed in Bermuda, then I'm doing transfer price. And I found it here, but I'm an offshore country owner, or I have listed, I'm a South African that's listed my company offshore. You transfer price. If I'm a manufacturer of pots or pans, or manufacturer of steelwork, and I have a steel company that has a marketing or trading division offshore, and I sell to myself from my field steel company, that end product of steel that I've manufactured at a reduced price, the real price that is supposed to come into South Africa, the triple down effect continues. So it doesn't just end in the mining with the commodities, it also continues with the steel. Now can you imagine a situation of this? If there's no legislation, then you don't only have us in the mining industry screaming and crying and begging for transfer pricing to stop. You're now going to have those that are starting to industrialize screaming and shouting and begging and pleading for transfer pricing to stop. And on our right is the Secretary General of the Bank Manufacturers Association, Mr. Adile Chabile. If he can start telling you how much is done and what is happening on the manufacturing through transfer pricing and how companies of thousands of workers had to close, your hair will raise. And it's the same problem we're having. So this is what I'm saying. If we don't get the resources laws right, and we stop our surprising there, the trickle-down effect will come to when we industrialize, and we have the special economic zones, not only will the foreigners, or maybe we, the South Africans, create a company in a special economic zone, where you can get tax incentives, which the South Africans taxpayers' money, you can get access to 900 million, 550 million and all that, which is the South African taxpayer money in South Africa, but you're not going to pay the right tax in your mine, and you're also not going to pay the right tax when you industrialize, when you create a commodity. So we have to combat that, even before we start with massive industrialization centers in the special economic zone. So the time when special economic zones become very active, because the leaders declared, there's one that's been declared in Limpopo, and there's another one that's soon to be declared, I'm not sure whether they have been declared, but you can advise us, in Northwest. Now one of those factories, those hundreds of or tens of thousands of factories get created, and you're not arrested for the problem of transfer pricing, then you have another problem. Okay, these are also the other products that can be done, so the PGMs, platinum blue metals, you create all these products in South Africa. Now when you look at the mining value chain, where you apply and get a scorecard, you go through a discovery, and you go through the concept study, pre-feasibility, feasibility study, and you commission, and after commissioning, you create a mine. After creating a mine, you then smelt, or you refine, or you, and then from there you have to beneficiate. Now there were comments made about how do we ensure that we stop this problem. The way to stop transfer pricing is very simple in South Africa. You create the mine by going through the process, the mine value chain. After creating the mine, make sure that the bulk of the South African are domiciled in our country. Our primary listing must be here, even if we are secondary listing somewhere else, but we must be domiciled in South Africa. And by being domiciled in South Africa, you fall under South African relevant jurisdiction. But not only there, if you look at gold producer sectors, and I'm making an example of Anglo Ashanti and all these other gold producers, they're fine in South Africa. These are companies that are having their primary listing in South Africa. They're defined in South Africa. They're domiciled in South Africa. And then they meet at the refinery to discuss the price, all these gold producers. And after discussing the price, their gold comes back as the price is being discussed. And the decision has all this pattern has been made. So there are examples that are really working. So let's see to which extent can we learn from the gold producers that are domiciled in South Africa. Now if there's a gold production company that's not domiciled in South Africa and your primary list is not in South Africa, then of course you can then also, do some transfer pricing issues. But in South Africa it's very difficult. And you know, so something is working in this sector. Let's see beyond that, how much more we can look into it and how much more we can then, embrace what is already working and see how we can start from foundation that is already working and go beyond. Let's look at Impala Platinum. The primary listing is here, they don't decide in South Africa, it's a South African company. And many companies that are South African companies would then not be so exposed to transfer pricing activities. Now the case study. I was asked also by your BDI chair, the Portfolio Committee chair, to give a case study. And I thought, let me come and give back the case study that I did the last time. So that it's, there were, you know, we just sort of rushed to it. And once more, may I say, I can't reveal the company name, but the name is there. And if the DMR can bring you the information, and then you pull it back then to come in and to hunt that, then it's easier. You know, there are ways in which you can avoid being sued, because in the end you are government. But here I can't deal with a company. But this is the real truth. We've got a company here that brought the two company, the South African, and these are the two lines. And then you have an international company which created a South African subsidiary, which is giving you a diagram transfer price. So the international company is a South African subsidiary. It's owned by foreigners. And in mine A and mine B, the B partners own shares in the mine. They don't own shares in the international company. So the international company has created a company in South Africa. So the South African company is the South African subsidiary. And then you have the international company, which is the foreign holding company. So this foreign holding company created a marketing or trading arm. And this is the market trading arm that does transfer pricing. So the international companies own the South African companies and the marketing trading company. The B company does not own. So where the B company is just in the mine, in mine A and mine B. So mine A and mine B will produce the mineral, and mine A and mine B will then sell the mineral to this international company through the international company ZECU, which is a foreign trading company. So this foreign trading company, which belongs to your partner, will then market or trade or sell your ore on your behalf from your line. So when they do it, what happens? The current structure of the case study, okay? So you have a company investment, which is foreign holding company. A foreign investor company invested in two mines in South Africa, mine A and mine B. The foreign investor created a local subsidiary company, Y, in which the shares were held. The foreign investor also created an offshore trading company to market the commodities from the two, mine A and B. So what happened is that a triple B company became the B partner through purchasing of shares in mine A and mine B. So the triple B company does not own shares in the foreign holding company, only in the mine. The triple B company is not a shareholder trading company which is owned by a foreign company alone. This trading company is a company that does their transfer pricing. So the triple B company is not involved in the transfer pricing, just sells the company. And at that stage, over some years, the triple B company did not know yet about transfer pricing until the triple B company started raising questions in terms of the marketing to say we want to be part of the marketing. And when the triple B company sent its efforts to go check in London, in the marketing country where they market, then they came back and said, we're not going to sign the old financial statements because there's something wrong. Mine A and mine B produce the same mineral. The mineral produced are priced by international buyers, traders, as well as at South African Harbour on a free of board basis, thereby determine the spot export market price of the commodity. The foreign oil trading company structured a marketing agreement with the two mines, forcing them to sell their product at 7% discount to the spot export market, where the marketing fee should have been 2%. So that 5% is how they transfer price. By so doing, the top of the company was forced to sell its foreign partners let them the market, then e.g. if the price of the commodity was 100 rand, then the new income was only 93 for the BE, not 100. The was only 93 and not 100. So you lose the 7. The trading company justified the payment of the 7% as a marketing commission payable for marketing and trading services rendered, and that is not so. So, you know, so they say, okay, it's legal, but the legality of it is questionable. So you go further, the transfer pricing order conducted by triple B company. The marketing arrangement left the line, with minimal profits most of the time. Over and above the discounted sale of commodity by its own foreign trading company, by its own mine, the foreign investor often sells commodity to the end user at a higher price than a spot market price. Transfer pricing occurs with a discounted price and the additional higher price. The local profits, the network profits from the lines made it impossible for the triple B company Exeter to pay its loans for acquiring the shares, and by 2014 does not have 26% ownership through unencumbered net sale as per section 102B of the NPRDA, and the elements of the line chart and the managed short score passed by 2014. So I did show you, when you apply for a permit to trade or a permit to do anything in the mining sector, you've got to tick against the scorecard. And I showed you some examples of the ticking of the scorecard. Despite the fact the foreign company has been in breach of the mining charter, there's been no legislative penalties imposed on the foreign company. It could be Section 47 or Section 98 or any other relevant section of the NRDA. And then, this is just one company. And if you look at the audits, and you do an audit of all the companies, you're going to have the same effect. So where is the appetite to make sure that companies are accountable and companies are compliant? What do we do to inject that appetite? Because we are now the people that need that ejection to become a reality. So there's compliance. And now we sit here, we're going to lose our shares because we're not prepared to sign an agreement that's not trying to comply. So what happens? The bank is going to be the new owner today at 2 o'clock in the meeting today.
Today?
Yeah. And we're not one, because we're the full forces of the economic revolution. We will not betray the cause. If we are going to sign that, it means that we will then be in cahoots of transferring the charter compliance to regulations. We're not going to do it.
I hope everyone has...
We're not going to do it. So we'd rather lose our shares. And be true to the cause, because if there are not going to be people that are going to do it, who's going to do it? Who is going to do it? We've got two options. We can sign the document and still be there, or we can sell our shares and make a lot of money and walk, but that'll be optimal. We're not going to take the shares. We're not going to do that, because true transformation has to happen. There has to be those people that will be true to the cause. And if we don't do it, and you don't do it with us, we are on our own. And if we're not the only ones, now you find others that say, hey, umlungu bangwane, hey, mehulema khalib, pilare, in Setswana, ketlala, meaning that what am I going to do? I'm suffering. You know, we are also suffering. None of us are owners. But you are the same way we collectively have to go and engage.
I'm very sorry to interrupt you. Chair, can I ask a question of clarity?
Sorry, yes, I'm just finding my spot here.
Sorry, what was that?
Can I ask a brief question of clarity?
Alright, clarify
this. Can I just ask which company in your structure actually holds the mine license?
I did indicate. Company A, Company B. That's what we did. The mining license is in the Company A and Company B. And in that mining license, it is the mining license that goes to the DMR. And it's the mining license that has to tread. And the mining license then has to become compliant to the scorecard. So if the mining license is not compliant to the scorecard, you don't get a license. So that's where we are. But we're not party to anything beyond Company A, Company B. Yeah. So I'm just saying that, you know, we sit here and, you know, 2 years ago, it was a different struggle. Women were not allowed to go underground. We were black. We couldn't do many things. And now, you know, 28 years later, I fight a different fight. You know, before then, we were going to sign that document when Nelson Mandela put his hand on the book and started voting for all to be equal on 1994 election. That day, man, is going to be the beautiful day in the air of life. Never did I think that I'm going to sit here fighting another different struggle. Another one that's going to make sure that the economy of South Africa functions. And the economy of South Africa best in the hands of South Africa. For South Africans to benefit our country, black, white, yellow, or green, doesn't matter. So we go further. Despite the fact that the foreign company has been breached, okay, fine, I said it. A marketing audit was commissioned by the Triple B company to investigate this disproportionate income arrangement caused to transfer pricing. The final audit was accepted and correct by the foreign holding company and foreign trading company. Despite the fact the report found that the foreign company should have only discounted the price at between 2% and 3% and not 7%, thereby achieving an extraordinary profit of 4%, the foreign company continues with this price. But no, it doesn't just end there. The capital goods that is supplied the mining company, because they're the supplier also of goods, if this is 2 rand, they sell it to the mine at 10 rand. If this is 1 rand, they sell it to the mine at 20 rand. so, you know, it's a garden. So we go there. But it's not just us. I'm just making a demonstration of what really happens to all of us. All of us. That they are not getting what they have to get. E.g., 100 less 10% discount is 93 times, 100 times less 10% discount is equals 93 times, but should have been 100 times less 3% discount, which is 97 times, resulting in rent per ton, resulting in a 4 rent per ton extraordinary profit for the home trade. That 4 rent per ton could be 400 million, it could be 100 million, it could be 40 million, it could be, you know, 4 million, depending on what the income is. And we have the figures. But I can't tell you what the real figure is because of this food. You know, discounts or the scale of the quality to the foreign trading company was between 2% and 3%. This would be able to cover all the variable costs, including the reasonable returns associated with the risk of the activities conducted by the foreign trading company. A calculation of this case study was therefore based on a profit differential of 4% in favor of the foreign trading company owned by the foreign partner. But I think we didn't have enough. So in platinum, you'd have in gold, you have platinum, you have chrome, you might have rhodium, you might have palladium. These are the byproducts. And you find that many of the companies also do not reflect the income for the other byproducts. In the permit or the license that you got, it may be just for gold. In platinum, you've got gold, you've got chrome, you've got palladium, you've got rhodium, you've got other byproducts. So to which effect does those other byproducts? And then something else. Then it is like a hedging system. They'll say, oh no, I'll sell this thing to you at future price. And the future price, because future, the markets are whatever, could be maybe $3. When the future price is not $3, could be $30. So you know, I'm just saying there are many ways of transfer pricing. I normally just use the one simple one. Just to get that conceptualization. And from there we can then explore to all the others. Now, the potential transfer pricing impact we're talking about, if mine A and B produce 5% of the platinum market, if you look at the platinum, okay, maybe, and I'm not, and the transfer price you said was 212 million rand per annum, and it's like 1,250 times 10 times 0.22 ounces per 7%, you find that the 3% transfer price will be 91 million per annum, which is 1,050 times 10, that, you know, just look at that calculation, and the extraordinary profits will be 1.1 million. We just showed you like a hypothetical figure of what is happening. If I put the real figure, it's definitely much more than 1.1 million. And if you look at all this, all producers were doing transfer pricing, 100% of pets in the market, the potential loss for half would be the 7% transfer price, and the 3% transfer price, the extraordinary loss for staff was 677 million per annum from one mine. So that's what I was saying, you know, if we can just indulge the DNR more to really open and let us talk about it and show you the figures, you'll really realize what the problem is. And for platinum, and in coal the same thing, you'll have a loss of 606 million per annum for potential tax loss of SARS. If you look at those figures and see how they work, in terms of the percentages of 5% versus vis-a-vis whatever the commodity should be. Now the recommendations. We welcome the fact that the Minister of Finance of the Special Commission under Judge Dennis Davis that will investigate the same type of impact upon the department relations in the country. Now, excuse me, we have already said that let's look at how gold producers are doing it and maybe start from there. We need to look at the Reserve Bank regulations. We need to look at why it is that we allow so many companies to be offshore listed and have their primary listing offshore. If you have your primary domicile in South Africa, your primary listing is here, it doesn't preclude you from being listed anywhere else. You can be listed in other countries, but your primary listing is in South Africa. Mercedes Benz doesn't have a primary listing outside of the, you know, all these kind of companies that manufacture in Germany. Many of them are German-owned companies and German-based. Look at also Ford. Companies that are manufacturing cars and whatever in America. The American base and American owned. So why aren't you doing what others are doing? And make sure that you continue allowing ourselves to be part of international trade. May I just make one example? A company that we also used to be party to in the company Macau Mining is the executive chairperson of, Shell Sinkers. Listed on the 24th of December, 2010. We refused to be party to that listing. We sold our shares. because it says we will not allow the primary listing to be offshore. Our major partners sort of, you know, overruled us, and they took the company. This is a company that was created by Anglo-American in 1961. And the company built a lot of the mines in South Africa. And through that company, we went to America, and we went to Russia, we went to India, Sidrun in Switzerland, the longest railway tunnel in the world has two ventilation shafts, was done by us. Joinville in France, we went to Brazil. It was global, a unique company. And then underway offshore listing, we became the partner that bought those shares. Where the workers own in 20%, we own 36%, and the foreign owners own still 5%, 25% of the 5. So when the 55% owner died, we then were bought, they bought the shares. The first company died, owners, the Kazakhstan company bought the shares. Yeah, and they own 55%, but our money ended up increasing its shares from 25 to 36, and the workers own shares. Then, it was never our intention with the workers. And these workers are Goeie Afrikaners and Goeie Batubalanso, South Africans, who have nowhere to go. The best are thinking people and skilled in the world. You can't find the master thinker, that's few. And who are those? The Vietnams of the South African countries. Both Josiah and Zobe, you know, good guys. And then what happened? So they decided to enlist offshore. And we, in our true activism role, say, no, we're not going to allow that. We're not going to allow this company to be primarily listing and domiciled ashore. So we had no other interest. We may have to try to block it, but we can't block. And then we sold our shares. But thank God we sold ourselves, because when we sold our shares, the company sort of trickled down, and then now they're going through a unique, big, 800 million suing by Eurocom. It's a whole big thing in the papers. So all I'm saying is that we need to make sure that we're passionate and true to the cause. And we need to make sure that we have the company. If that company was still here, we would still have had those 9,000 workers or 6,000 workers, depending on the amount of contracts we have. We would still have continued all over, and, you know, everything would have been fine. But of course, there were reasons why shareholders do certain things. So I'm just saying that legislation, is important to make sure that our country functions. Now, we suggest that the immediate alignment of the mining charter and the triple B code of the good practice must be done, as it's long overdue. Why are we saying that? Now, please listen to me. There are many aspects of mining charter that have a little bit of loopholes that can be covered by the triple B code. Just to make an example. In the mining charter, it talks about effective ownership. It doesn't talk about uncovered net value. But the triple B code says for those words. When we summed up in those words, somehow, I don't know, the powers that be in the department and officials just get up, you know, and it didn't happen. Now, to the extent that you do not own 100% and you have not paid up 100%, you don't own. So all of us are artificial owners of lands that we don't own. Many of us are artificial owners of manufacturing plants that we don't own. If you haven't paid up your shares in the factory 100%, if you haven't paid up your shares in 900%, you're not an owner. And that's where the problem comes. Now, if you align that, it's not just about the ownership. It also, the triple B codes also talk about procurement. You know, it has a lot of clauses that are very unique. And for the past years, the alignment had to be done. Now I'm asking you, the DTI, what is happening? When you sit with the DMR, can't you make it happen? when is it going to happen? I mean, we go in to do certain things. So please help. You know, we can't be the ones losing money to banks and refusing to go and list companies offshore because we're true to the cause. We're also true to the cause. But they say that certain things have to be done. And I know this is not the only thing. You are oversupplied with a lot of work. And it's not you who's guilty. And there's no guilty person. There's a slow process that needs to happen. There are two departments that have to meet in the meeting, and there are two departments that have to make sure that triple B code is aligned with the mining charter. Then when the president has signed the bill or not now, certain things will have to happen, because the alignment makes it happen.
What I just want to say, Mr. Sadevi, is that we've just got 5 minutes left for the presentation before our engagement.
Okay, so now I'm gonna wrap up. We need legislation to implement it by 2014. I know the DMR is going to come and say that it's done an audit on the charter. I'm not sure what the audit is going to say. But all I'm saying is that 2014 certain things had to happen that affect the DTI, that affect finance, that affect us, that affect all of us, and we need to start naming and shaming the companies. You do fewer of them, then everybody will come on board. And make sure that we force, coerce, encourage companies to be compliant. Then we don't have to nationalize, hopefully, because the charter compliance issues are alleviating some of the burdens. And the national development plan will then become, will come effective. And if we don't, I don't know. It's all your choice. I'm here to plead, please, South Africa, let us join our hands together. You're not the only ones that are having stress. I just spilled out the kind of operational challenges that we're having, where our companies will be taken and things are going to happen. But you know what? Our conscience is clear. Because we didn't come here just to own minds. We came here to make sure that the true transformation is best in the hands of South Africans, for South Africans.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Khadebe. Now it's over to us. On the back-to-back there. So any comments, questions from the committee members? Honourable Mkongi, anyone else? For the moment, just Honourable Mkongi.
Oh, sorry, I don't know that's the problem.
Sorry. Honourable Shabambu.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we also need to to welcome this presentation. I think it was done to us last year, and we are slight addition now, yeah, in terms of the case study. But it is something that makes me not to realize. We are speaking about companies that they have applied for licenses in the Republic of South Africa. And one of the requirements that we are putting, we are saying that they must comply, you know, with the charter, and they must comply. I don't know what was the slide. I can reach it.
Yes,
there was a slide there.
Transfer price and orders conducted, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. No, it's called a scorecard. The difference could have. And then you said you are receiving or you are giving licenses in South Africa if she complies with it. But at the end we are saying that these companies do not comply. I mean, if they are supposed to be given licenses when they are complying, how are they not complying? It's not having spaces here. It's written scorecard for the broad-based socio-economic development charter for the South African industry. Yeah. Yeah, the scorecard. So how do they manage to get these licenses if they do not?
I think you're asking
that. You see? And secondly, it's a question of the relationship between this presentation from SAMD and that Honorable Shivam represented here. Because if I can see, it's taking us into the same direction. Yeah, this one. The previous year you requested the very same thing, which is in your recommendations. And then some of these matters, we did not yet implement them. And which I think that date could be integrated in the input that was presented to us by Honorable Shivam as part of it, because I don't see the Chinese world between two. You know, because the matter here, which is fundamental, is the question of the transfer, I think, that's the contradiction, which makes our own minds to be a bit challenged. The second one, which is strategy, give us practical things. I want practical things. If you look at the act that is proposed organizations.
The Northern Petroleum Resources Development Act.
Yeah.
Section 100.
Yes. So how do you see the integration? You know, because at the end of the day, we need to be writing the law if we agree generally that these three portfolios. So how do you see that integration in terms of the existing laws that we have? Thank you very much.
So what we're really saying, because we're going to have another opportunity before we need finance, is that before that we need this proposal, if you like, that would spell that out more clearly, you see. So we're saying here, we agree, the law is here, but people are not complying and there seems to be no enforcement. Therefore, it seems to be a free get out of jail card issue. Here it is, you don't have to comply. So what we need to know, and you've repeatedly said this and made this point even over the colloquium, is that there has to be alignment. We agree there has to be alignment between the BBB and the EE and the NPRDA. But can you share with us, perhaps verbally today, and then in writing, how, in your opinion, how would this look, or what can be done in this regard? And by the way, with us here today representing DTI is the chief economist, Stephen Harnable, I think it is, I hope I'm not right, yes, Mr. Steve Harnable, is that right, who's representing the DTI. With us earlier was someone from the budget office, but he's not here. Dr. Gyamshi, he's doing the research for finance as well in this area. Okay, so if you could just share verbally with us that issue, yeah.
Honorable
Shivabu?
No, just want to highlight that with the implementation of the special economic zones,
oh, yes,
we should be alert of the reality that we can have intra-transfer pricing where companies that are in certain zones or not as it is can engage in transfer pricing by putting offices or shell offices in areas of as it is and saying that most of our services are provided by those zones. Because another question with SEZ is that the taxes will be lower, 15%, and then in other areas it will be normal. So they will put companies in the SEZ and say we're getting a service from outside because an SEZ was the zone which is dedicated, they were getting services that cost us this much. So we'll be aware of that possibility. So we need to have a discussion with the Department of Trade and Industry in the whole out of SEZ to avoid those, because in all countries that took the approach of IDZ and SEZ development, they've always encountered such difficulty. So we should from the beginning be aware that there will be attempts by private corporations to avoid taxes internally through the special economic zone. It's one of the things that, because the private sector is always seeking maximization of profits, and that is what they go to do. So we need to be fully alert of that possibility when we move into the SEZ process.
Well, we are in that process now. That is why it's valuable that you raised it now. We've got someone just at the back in Kayla, I think it is the researcher. Is that the Faith Jacobs?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I'm Faith Jacobs, from Parliament. But I think also to contribute to what Ms. Khalebe has presented, that is the main intention to miss out, is the fact that for as long as we don't pay attention to the flaws of the NPRDA, and particularly certain sections that have something to do with the charter and that have something to do with the probation system, as well as the penalties that are supposed to be applied, then you're continuously going to be faced with problems of disparities. Now, the issue is that with the previous parliament, there was a big challenge in terms of the NPRDA and letting that go through in the changes that were necessary. My concern was more on the issue of the focus was not being correct. the different plane that we are faced with in the mining industry versus the issues of the oil, the gas, and the gas, the petroleum industries. And that actually also brings its own complication on the implementation of the taxation within the country. Also added to that was the long-standing issue of the fact that the integration in discussions of the relevant portfolio committees in particular on legislation in relation to the royalties as well as the taxation issues with Treasury in particular were not coming to the floor. And those discussions not coming to the floor meant that we are not actually focused or we are not paying enough attention on the issue of the taxation system, which I think that also needs to be brought to the focal attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, and that is Ms. Faith Jacobs from Sunder. Am I correct? Yes, thank you. So there was this Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think we should just, you know, call a spade a spade. From what I've heard from you, basically foreign monopoly capital are using transfer pricing to undermine beneficiation and BBBEE. And fundamentally, the whole entire economic transformation for 20 years has basically been a big con. And we need to wake up today, is what you're saying, right?
Ownership and procurement.
Yeah. But I mean, fundamentally, they're using all sorts of mechanisms to undermine our transformation strategies. So we definitely need to do something about this as soon as possible, because I just have one question. The situation that you're in, does it mean that at 1401 today, a company that did comply through the scorecard will not comply anymore and should lose its license then at that time? That's the only question I've got.
The company never complied in the beginning. In all the years that the partners were supposed to own shares, they have not ever owned shares. For the year that the partners were the partners. And the loan repayment went up to the higher loan because dividends were never paid, and because dividends for all work, the BE angle, not just me sitting here, the vulnerable people are there. So the loan, even when at the time when there was money in the bank, cash, they did not pay dividends because they don't need the income. They do make money by virtue of selling the oil, you know, so at the price that's beneficial to them. And also, secondly, effectively what has happened now is that the bank then comes in and says, I'm in such a year, the shares should have all been paid up, not one thing has been paid up. And by such a year, not only has one thing not been paid up, but the interest has hiked by another 200, 300 trillion. So if you bought the shares for 10 rand, now the interest now, with the interest is now 300 rand. And by so doing, you know, the companies now have now to all give, I'm trying not to say much so that I don't get sued, but I'll tell you the practical issue. The company now has to now restructure the loan, and the non-BE partners must then obviously continue with the guarantees. They won't give the guarantees because they need the money. So even after the life of mine, you'll never own the mine. So we have to get rid of it. Not only are we not owners in the marketing, you need to also own the marketing company so that we trade with you, so the company. And secondly, we also have to make sure that the true expectation of the client is an income. There must be dividend policy and all these things. But beyond that, they would say, but we can't sign this because you're not trying to comply. Now, the atrocity of it is, last 2 weeks ago, we then go to the DMR. By the fact that the DMR had given them a letter to impose Section 98. Section 98 says, I give you remedial action, because last year, in the first quarter of last year, we had a meeting with the DMR, and one of the DMR DDGs saw us, and in that meeting, he then said to them, but you're not compliant, you've got to comply. And the DMR kept on doing compliance orders and keep on saying to them they should, and they're not even a Section 98 was given. After the Section 98 was given, the DMR then says to them, fine, you then need to comply, but they're not compliant. But to my shock and horror, 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting, and we find that what the DMR did, they actually signed an approval of the Section 1 and 2 that they applied for. when they applied for that Section 182, they were not supposed to. How do you give someone approval of if they're not complying? Because the tick, you have to comply with many aspects of the charter. Now, if you don't comply with the tick in the charter and the scorecard of the charter, you don't give someone a reward for another section. So we are saying, wait a bit. If you look at Section 102, it says you cannot do it unless the charter has been complied with. And then, the DMR, then the official of the DMR, the regional manager, then said, oh no, in the meeting we had 2 weeks ago, that you are compliant. And I said, wait a bit, where in the act that I personally have been very involved as stakeholders through the South African Iron and Rail Association in designing the law, where does it say we have transferred, or we have deferred, or we have extended the 2014 compliance rules of regulation of the charter beyond 2014? Whether it's ownership, whether it's beneficiation, whether it's procurement, whether it's health and living conditions, whether it's community development, whether it's human resource, where in this act, if you can show me just what clause in the act that says those charter compliance regulations in the scorecard have been deferred or postponed or transferred or extended beyond 2014, then we will sign. But if it's not there, we will not sign. We'd rather not have the shares. And let the bank take the shares and we'll go to Parliament, we'll expose this thing, and let the people of South Africa come on board, and collectively we need to decide. Do we really want to be having meaningful ownership by ourselves? Meaningful housing and living conditions, to let people live in better houses than shacks, to let people have skills, to let the community development be properly done, to be social and labor plan, all those aspects of the charter. If we do, and we need to do something about it, and those officials in the DMR that are so wrong must be taken to task. Because our faithful official, you have no mandate to change the law of the country.
My view on that one then is, if we can just get back here in writing, we've heard it, it is recorded, you know, it's read officially, it is a point that we will have to take up as a committee. It has, to some extent, been referred to last time in the colloquium when we highlighted the challenges of unencumbered ownership. And they doubt it is there again. So I just want to get DTI coming in there, Ms. Herbeli, just a schema.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair. Just perhaps three quick comments. I think firstly, when we think about the developmental pricing that the DTI has been motivating for to unlock beneficiation in South Africa, both the presentations from Honourable Floyd and from the Sandra really bring home the fact that developmental pricing is possible in the mining industry in South Africa. That's a point that we've been making repeatedly. Honourable members will be aware that at the mining Indaba, GTI was in a sense fingered as being the primary reason the NPRDA was being returned to Parliament. And there were a number of media reports about what the DTI was trying to achieve. And I think what we heard this morning really talks to the fact that what we're asking for in many of the value chains that have been prioritized, such as platinum, titanium, iron and steel, and the like, in order of a 10 to 20% discount on the spot market price, these are not unreasonable demands to unlock beneficiation and the arbitration that goes with that. So when we assess whether the developmental pricing regime that DTI is motivating for is reasonable or not, we should bear in mind some of what's been raised this morning. Chair, the second issue is around the ECZs, and it's an incredibly important point that's been made. We are mindful of the potential for transfer pricing and avoidance to occur within the ECZs. We're also, of course, very mindful that what we don't want to see is existing investments
in other parts of Africa be transferred or relocated to ECZ purely to benefit from the better tax regime. And so it is something that we are very concerned about and we will be monitoring quite carefully. In terms of the NPRDA and compliance, they are particularly with regards to BEE, etc. We also engaged in a process with DMR. We understand from our DMR colleagues that in the course of this year there will be a review, as we understand, quite a detailed review of compliance levels. We expect that we will be allowed to participate in that review. I think just to alert the committee, one of the issues that we have seen come through is, for example, because there's an area, an element of misalignment in terms of the mining charter and the overall BE codes, we do see that, for example, in mining capital equipment, some of the South African mining companies are now importing capital equipment, often through the agency and intermediary, and of course that doesn't have a localization benefit to the economy then as a result. So we are engaging our colleagues in DMR to hopefully ensure a much tighter alignment between the DTI's BEE codes and what might be a future mining charter with the current one in the sense expired. Thanks, Chair.
Now, I think that's very important. I just want to, as we move towards closure in the next 15 minutes, let's hear what you have to say with Honourable Kalako.
Chair, I think there was a practical question which Mkongo asked from Ms. Kante. So that way.
Yeah, I can answer if you want.
Well,
the question, the way I understood it, is how do you link the two? Okay, and then that's why I brought, and I just, well, you know, the first time I gave a lot of things. I informed about the social economic zones, and I went overall in my understanding. This time I said, whatever is the zoom of the issues that are more your aid. If you look at Section 100 of the Act, please have a look at it. It talks about the mining charter. When you open the mining charter, in the mining charter, there are elements of the charter. And in that element of the charter, there's issues about beneficiation, there's issues about procurement, and actual goods and all that. But then it doesn't just end there. When you look behind the money charter, there's a scorecard. And if you look at the scorecard, you're going to have, this, if you look on the screen, you're going to have that. In the beneficiation, there's a scorecard, it talks about what elements, that's the beneficiation scorecard. And before then, there's the procurement and enterprise development scorecard. And it's all DMR related. You understand? Now, within the beneficiation, as soon as you industrialize and you want to create this kind of thing, okay, it is going to become surprising from the minerals that we have. Remember, in the first submission that I made that I didn't bring again, we spoke about the 11 strategic minerals that DMR spoke about, and we said please increase them to 15, because we cannot have a country that doesn't have phosphate for food security. Phosphate, we create the fertilization for agriculture. And cement is limestone. And then shell gas, and you know, so we went on and on. And said, if you look at all these minerals, and you create this end product of this and that, this is all DMR. You know, industrialization. It's all UDPI. But where does mineral come from us? We do the transfer pattern on the production side, and as if we didn't have enough, then the data factories come, then you do transfer pattern on the factory side. And then that has to be not done. But if you go beyond that, and I didn't include it in this submission because I gave it to you before, but I can pre-send it. If you look at the special economic zones that I unpacked for you the last time I was with you, it speaks about the tax incentives. It talks about also the amount of money that you can apply for. 900 million, 350 million, or when you want to create any of this, provided you comply with what it's a green food project or brownfield, and you're going to make sure that there's going to be a skills transfer, and it's a unique kind of thing that, you know, you have to ensure that you comply with all those requirements, then you get the money to go and create any of those, you know, social economic zones. So it's all DMR, but linked with the DTI. So, with the DMR and DTI. So what we're doing as producers of minerals, we say, okay, the integrated resource development is very fundamental. And fundamental in this issue of these is the Department of Finance to look into the Act of funds for pricing, the Department of Minerals Energy to make sure the charter compliance does prevail to make sure that these officials of the government that are not doing the right thing are taken to task or maybe re-told that the right thing must be done and the wrong permits must be corrected. And then also to make sure that the BBB codes are signed and aligned with the charter, and to make sure also beyond that that when we go and we have the special economic zones, beneficiation, industrialization, procurement is localized. But to a thing that doesn't come to party, and to a thing that we don't just procure from offshore. But be careful, there's a Section 32 of the Act that says any company that takes any of our commodities to go and create an end product should apply to the government before they can create the product. Now, what does that mean? Can you imagine if all those 8 alkaline minerals, okay, let me show you here, steel, iron ore, manganese, nickel, vanadium, and chrome, look at those minerals, and look at how they've been created. Now, each and every factory worldwide that created all those products applied buy the steel, the iron ore from us, and apply it first to create the product. Then God will ask how much you get it from the mine. Excuse me, and then you'll know whether there was transfer time. If that mine is now an offshore that the company has bought it for a cheaper price to sell and sold it to an expensive, then we will know. But have we ever implemented it? And beyond it, government can then say, why are you doing it there? Why don't you do it in South Africa? We've got a special economic zone. So that act has to become viable. And that act has to become usable. So that we can then have, we've done many clauses in the act that can allow us to make some such. We just have to implement them. And then we need the right people in the government offices to make sure that they do the right thing.
Now, this is what I would say, what we want, I know you're going to ask, yes, I'm going to recognize that you gave us that before. I think you probably, if you look at people sitting here, it's only Honorable Nkongi that was sitting there at the time. You thought,
oh,
and I think, Honorable Hill Lewis was there. So what I'm saying is we do have it, and of course, Mr. Lewis will redistribute that particular one because it is more valuable. But I think what would be useful is in addition to that, we've got that, can you just add informed of the engagement that we're having there now? So we can just leave us with that because there's a lot more coming out even now. But I am going to, Honorable Mkongi had a follow-up, just let him do that. It wasn't a follow-up. And let's just run it from this side. And then Honorable Hill Lewis wanted a comment and Honorable Kalako. All right.
Listen, I wanted to repeat my question, but I was told it was answered with how these people manage to get these licenses. So I can see that it's corruption. That's again, just
the people got the licenses. You are, if you're an official of government, you have to act according to the Minerals and Petroleum Resource Development Act. Not outside it, in it. There's no way you can tell someone that has not been charter compliant, that they can continue getting permits and conversions and licenses when they have not complied. If you go to the bank and you want to get an overdraft and you don't comply when the bank falls, you don't get the overdraft. So what you're doing is that you're actually incentivizing someone, rewarding someone for not complying, making a mockery of our laws. And here we are saying we will not allow this to happen. We do not get into the business just to be owners of business. We got into the business to make sure that we create an economic, rapid economic transformation for the majority of our people, for everybody, whether you're white, black, yellow, green. But with those clauses of the charter that are biased towards historically disadvantaged science groups, that are biased towards even those non-historically historically disadvantaged science groups that are science groups, for science groups, must apply. And unfortunately, we also have a lot of these officials that if you look at the registration of ownership declaration, go and look, ask the minister. Go and look. You can't be an official and own a mine and your part is BHP, Billiton, or Unlist, or that day tomorrow when another person brings. It is a problem. It is a big problem. And it's a pity that we have to say these things at a forum that is not a DMR for the quality alone. So we hope that one day the DMR will call us also so that we can talk to them. Please help us. We've previous to this got put for a committee. We even had the president of the Black Business Council in Daman Sende and I did it to the chair people of the study group and the fulfillment, say, please can we come? We don't want to run like bulls, cannons, that we are not, to go and say things and then you read about us in the papers. We need to start with you first because you are a starting point. Somehow we haven't been accorded that privilege yet, only once last year in May, and you have asked us more than once, because there's no point if you're doing it alone, and the GMI doesn't call us, and the finance department hasn't asked, but we hope that Judge Dennis Davis has asked us to go and see him. We couldn't see him when he gave us the date, because everybody has to go to the commission if they ask you to come, so we were invited. So finance has come and said, please come and talk to us. So there's no point in us talking to you when the laws are done by another department. And when the laws are done by another department, it impacts on you, your department will never function. It starts with the middles and the laws for you to function.
I think the point is made, and that's why we said to you, if we start here, we're not only going to work with finance. We are going to work with other committees. But we needed ourselves to get back on track. That is the issue. And I think it's quite clear the point was made last term, not last term, but last year, that the lack of compliance is not a lack of legislation. There is legislation. It is individuals within departments. As the Minister of Finance has pointed out, no official must disclose these business interests. And I think that may have been one of the reasons. I don't know, not having spoken to him in this regard. But I want you to take the final 2 points before we reach some form of, not closure, that's the wrong word, but deciding to say we adjourn on this issue to take it forward. Honourable Hill Lewis?
No, thank you very much, Mrs. Levitt. I wanted to ask you, when we were in discussions around the BEE Amendment Act nearly 18 months ago now, the new amendment code, the new generic codes, we were persuaded by the argument that the requirements of the new code for unencumbered ownership targets not for gross ownership, if I can refer to gross ownership, but rather to net unencumbered value in the company was better than simply measuring perfectly illustrated in the example you shared with us today, measuring share ownership that will never really be realized because it's encumbered by it. So I wanted to just hear your thoughts on that, whether you agree with that argument that requiring targets on unencumbered ownership is better than a simple crude figure of 36%. And then you will know there was a lot of debate at the time, and that debate still continues about which instrument had preference. Was it the generic codes or was it the mining charter? And I think that debate still continues. It goes to the status of the so-called trunking clause, which was in act. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on that as well. Again, from our perspective, possibly hearing one side of the coin, it was sensible for us to envision a future in which the generic codes trump all else. Because that unencumbered value seemed more sensible to us, but I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Thank you, Uncle Bill Lewis.
I can say the problem we had is in from me. That in general, I think firstly we should be agreeing that we must meet with the committee on minerals. And because this impacts on us also. And so that we deal with the issue, just straightforward. And because to me, the issue is not this government. The issue is officials. And we are always blamed, and we are always attacked. Whereas we have done our work in parliament, we have passed these laws for the benefit of our people and transformation of the country. Then you get the officials there. And I think it's high time now. If we don't sit on officials, then we're going to have these problems here. To me, PA here, in fact, not only this department, application of these acts, you can go to labor, you can go to the application of all these acts and the way they have ended, is actually officials. So if we don't deal with that problem, we are going to be in this problem. So I was going to say, Chair, well, I think it's very urgent. We have to meet with the with the committee on minerals, and we deal straight to this issue.
I think even before we proceed further in terms of our engagement with finance, which we're looking towards the end, I think, of April, if I'm not mistaken, we need this engagement sooner, because to some extent it almost facilitates the form of sophisticated funding in terms of shareholding or ownership thereof. And this is what we thought we would be getting rid of when we dealt with that particular issue. But as we map a way forward, the one thing is clear, we need to ensure that every member has got the documentation available. We're also going to look forward to just a brief, a page on where we are now in addition to what we did receive before, and which links the two documents together and makes it very, very clear the point that was raised by the Honourable Mkondi here, and even a couple of points raised by yourself, Honourable Hill Lewis, in which you allude to some of the issues that arose during the deliberations on the BBBE before that particular legislation was adopted. Where are these impacts? Why didn't we see it at the time? And or have we seen it and have we dealt with it? But it's been undercut by road officials, if one could put it that way, who are not respecting the intentions of the legislation and flouting the legislation that there is there. So I am going to allow you to make a closing comment, but suffice to say that among us today, we've also got sitting here Mr. Nshabeleng, who's the Secretary General of the National Association of Manufactured and Electronic Components. We also have here, I think it is someone from the German Embassy, who's on the economic side from what I can see here. Is that Marco Schmidt sitting there at the back? And we may have a few others here that I haven't been able to see and recognize. In the past, there have been other representatives from other embassies here, and that shows you embassies are here among the many obligations they have. It is to monitor what may affect their own interests as well, and clearly this is of value in that regard to them. So they hear it at the coalface what is going wrong. But I want to thank you, Mr. Fadebe, because you were the first person in terms of this committee that began to highlight the challenges that transfer pricing was posing and the challenges in the lack of alignment between that and the NPRDA. And you also alluded to other legislation as well, which has been referred to here, the SEZs. But I think you've made it, the intention of the SEZ was never to encourage transfer pricing. The intention of the legislation was actually to make our products more competitive. And you know, you get, that doesn't even happen, that doesn't come close to happening, because we have this other impediment. And I'm really emphasizing that, Mr. Harnable, because you'll be going back to DTI. And we want you to take this back to DPI, even as we map a way forward, that we are going to call on the Minister himself to engage more directly with Mineral Resources, the Minister of Mineral Resources, and also to engage more directly with the Minister of Finance, National Treasury in this regard, but also, and this is what we should not forget, the Minister of Labour in this regard as well, because in the final analysis it impacts on those that contribute to the production in this regard. Now, we haven't finished this, but what we can say is we'll be taking this forward, first engaging with the committee
on mineral resources as a parliamentary committee. We're going to be rising soon at the moment, but when we come back in April, we may have to review what we've got here in the ABLE program, because we've also, at some point, we have to factor in your legislation on Lord Hill Lewis, and that has to come in before the end of April as well. So between the two and the other date of finance, which is the 22nd, we're going to have to factor this in somewhere before the 21st or 20th, this engagement with the Mineral Resources Committee. And we will brief you when that is happening, so that those who have expressed an interest now, like yourself, Mrs. Kagebi, would be able to attend that particular committee. So if you'd like to just make a closing statement now, thank you.
If a closing statement, you ask one question, and it has to do with unencumbered land. When you own, you can only own if you have paid up. But it's your house or your car. Don't worry about the mind. Think about your house or your car. To the extent that you've not paid your house or your car, you don't own it. The day that you can't own it, pay the bank taxes. So when we designed the legislation, it was just for that. So that the net effect, all things paid up. The net effect is, you then are going to have a house and a value. Is that house worth 1 million? After paying it up, you've paid it all up, it is now could be 2 million. Because you've also now done a little bit of renovation, you can enhance the price. But not beyond that, then the market is also valued even better. So I'm just saying, you can take that house and you can go to the bank and you can use it as collateral. You can make an audited financial statement out of it by virtue of reflecting it in your value. And through the value, there's a loan to go and enhance the business beyond, create more jobs or do whatever else you need to do in terms of the sustainability of your business or whatever. So the same thing applies to business. Now, for the thing that people do not have even 1% ownership, and the charter says it must be 26% by 2014, South Africa does not own. And then in closure, let's make sure that the charter combines the regulations by 2014 prevails. Let us consider contributing towards Judge James Davis' commission that was assigned by the Ministry of Finance in terms of how we can have regulation perfected and bettered. Hopefully include a lot of the operators, because a lot of the very uniquely learned professors and people are there, but we come with technical skills in terms of how the things should work, over and above the learned people in the community, then you have a win formula. And let us make sure there's a true commitment to making sure that the economy of South Africa becomes a vibrant economy that hopefully will wrap off towards all other economies in Africa. Africa has to function, and Africa has to develop. And if we can't get South Africa right, it will trickle down into a negative effect for all our neighbors, because everybody looks at us as a country that does a lot of things for the first time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We are wanting to close, but before we do that, just to point out, this was distributed as a very large document, and I think the constituency period will enable members to read it through and then to contribute. But we've also said, you haven't received it.
No, I'm just asking, where's the Becky one?
Is this it?
Yes. Oh, okay. AUECA conference on
Remember we pointed out to both Iraq. Now, what we are going to do, we are asking, we want to examine all these options. We heard some here this morning. And anyone, I mean, you're welcome to give us the names of people who can contribute to this conversation constructively. But we are making a commitment. It's the Mineral Resources Committee is next. That is for sure. We must engage. We're going to have to find space for that. After that, we will then have our own meeting to engage and prepare our broader position. We're not saying that every party will agree, but at least we'll all be familiar with the arguments and options on the table before we then move in a joint committee process with finance, perhaps once or twice. So we hear what the day this issue is, and we can engage it constructively. You will remember how we did it last time, and I think that was constructive. So that's the way forward there.
With respect to anything else happening in the committee, we aren't having anything right now. We indicated that there will be an oversight to SASL, and that Mr. Hermans will tie up with the identified members, and at the same time there will be a meeting with the horse racing, the grooms, etc., so that that can be done at the same time. In other words, there will be two oversight teams, in inverted commas, in which members will be present. You were not here the other day, Honourable Shibambu, and we hope that you would be able to try, I think it was a horse racing one, which in which the grooms are involved, and the issue is the transformation of the horse racing industry, broadly speaking, not just the grooms, obviously, but right from breeding and so on, racing, gambling, etc. It's never been transformed, and it is fragmented, and it is not in line with where we are going. So we have put your name down there, but we indicated we would approach you to see if you were available, but I'm meant to leave Mr. Hermans to finalize that process. But let me thank you very much, Mrs. Khadebi, for coming here. You've given us a lot of your time, but we needed that information. And I know that even those who may not entirely agree with you, at least they're getting greater insight into what is happening. And for the record, where we find this corruption, and it's quite clear that if there is corruption there for someone to have signed off something that is against the law, then we need as soon as possible to see what can be done about that. But it is, with the law doesn't come under us, the MPRDA, etc. So it will mean an engagement with the committee and a way forward in this regard, and may even require a question or a statement in the House, so that we can get clarification. But we prefer to work within the committee structure itself to see what we can get here working with colleagues in this regard. Thank you very much. Thank you for your attendance as well, Mr. Chabalik. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned until when after constituency, when? Oh, Friday. Oh, at 8:30. Thank you. Thank you.